to try and leave that rat race behind. Because a lot of people I talk to, they don't quite enjoy the day job. It's not what they're very passionate about, and neither am I. I enjoy kind of, I'm more of an entrepreneur working for myself, and I enjoy kind of networking with other people that mindset.
Welcome to this edition of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. An Australian look at reinventing yourself for retirement and getting yourself retirement ready. It's always fascinating getting to know what people are getting up to in retirement, how they are supplementing their incomes, pensions, where they have chosen to live, how they are filling their time, what charities they are supporting, and what adventures they are having. Anne will also talk to experts in their fields, including investing, health, estate planning, financial advisors, and seniors' health care.
Hi, it's Anne Nelson from the Retire Well, Retire Happy show. And today we're going down the investing track once again, talking to a young fellow that's very impressive. He's still working and he's built up quite a considerable real estate portfolio, and he's now mentoring others and doing bigger deals. But it's all about creating simple, positive cash flow for the future. Today our guest is Lane Kawaoka from Simple Positive Cashflow Company. Hi, how are you, Lane?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Where are you located?
In Honolulu, Hawaii.
You've got yourself well down the track with real estate investing, but what got you started? What made you want to have something else?
Yeah, so I started working and bought a property to live in. But then since I was never home, I started to rent it out. And I, at the time, it was bringing in about $2,200 a month. And the mortgage was $1,600 a month. And so I kind of netted the difference. And I realized that I just needed to buy a few more of these things and I'd be well off my way to replacing my income at my job. And that's kind of where things took off from there.
How old were you when you first started?
Yeah, so that was back in 2009, a few years out of college. So I think I was probably in, you know, early 20s, probably 22, 23 when I first bought my first property.
And do you think that's unique for you to start so young?
Yeah, probably. I mean, I think most people will kind of drift around through their 20s and just spend money on, you know, things that young kids spend their money on, and they don't wake up until they get stuck with kids or get married, and then they are like, shoot, I got to buy a home to live in. But I think by then it might be a little late, you know, maybe that debt starts to rack up. Definitely better to start earlier, you know, and you get to learn and you acquire better properties, better deals. You get to know more people. I think it's easier, you know. It's always hard to start.
Yes, and that's true. As with anything, it's always interesting listening to someone's journey. You've got to start somewhere. And you started, I believe, with single dwelling homes for rentals. But after a while, you progressed on from that.
Yeah, I started to, you know, get to bigger properties, you know, 50 unit, then 192 unit, and then a 52, 153 unit in Texas. They're just a little more scalable. You just have to partner with more people, and that's kind of what I do at simplepassivecashflow.com these days, you know, help people get started with that. But, you know, it all starts with that buying your first single-family home rental property. You know, it's slow in the beginning. This is not really a get-rich-quick kind of scheme. It's a buy and hold and slow grow.
So what influenced you into real estate as over other forms of investing?
Yeah, I think real estate is, you know, there's kind of the three rules I follow are, first, it produces income. So, you know, people are living there, they're your tenant, and it exceeds your mortgage or your cost to repair the property and your property management, who's managing the property. So that's the first thing. It's producing income. And then second, it's a hard asset. And you know, it's not like a piece of stock that has crazy price to earning ratios and the price just goes all over the place. And then thirdly, it's, you know, leverageable. Real estate's one of the very few things that you can go out and get a government subsidized loan here in America and, you know, get this 30-year amortized loan at very low interest rates. So kind of those three components make it the perfect storm to invest in. I don't really particularly like, you know, real estate per se, but I mean, I haven't found many things that offer those three benefits.
Right. And have you personally inspected all these properties? I mean, you live in Hawaii now, and so you're a landlord from afar to a lot of your properties, so you must have to rely on other people to help you manage all this.
Yeah, and you know, it sounds pretty crazy, but initially I just bought a lot of these properties sight unseen. And, you know, I mean, I'm busy at my day job. It really doesn't make much financial sense to go fly out there, you know, spend $1,000, $2,000 on a plane ticket and, you know, take away time from my job too. You know, you burn up vacation in somewhere boring like Birmingham. It's not very fun to go and visit. So you learn to rely on your property management team and then different brokers and, you know, just rely on other investors to, you know, ask them, where are you investing in? What do you think of this property? You know, and eventually you'll kind of come over and, you know, kick the dirt a little bit. But I think that can come later, especially if you're starting small.
Okay. So you've progressed on from single dwelling homes. Have you found it easy to get funding for these bigger ventures?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of people that, you know, they get it, right? Like, you know, these single family homes, you buy one, it creates a few hundred dollars of passive income a month, and, you know, you start to pile them on. But what I've been seeing the last couple years, you know, starting my podcast and blog, you know, a lot of people email me and they're totally on board, but there's always this big hang up on, okay, what do I do now, right? Where do I go and buy these properties? I got to deal with termites and tenants. Even though the property management does that for you, you know, there's always this barrier. And I admit, you know, it's kind of a leap of faith getting out of your comfort zone thing. So I guess what I offer these days for my investors is, you know, come in as a passive into a larger project where you don't do anything. You just invest the money and you know who the operators are and you know what's intimately happening with the property. And, you know, it's a lot, cutting out a lot of the middlemen. You know, that's really the problem with the stock market, right? You get all these middlemen in between taking their cut. And at the end of the day, it's the poor investor, the person working really hard, really left with nothing and taking on all the risk.
So, Lane, tell me about this investor club that you've created.
Yeah, so I have like a investor club. It's kind of like a co-op. And I don't see myself as a guru. I'm trying to learn every day and I'm trying to, you know, I join different masterminds and meet different people. I travel around a lot. I just started to, you know, podcast and people started to follow me, come on my email list, download my spreadsheets. And then they started to, I guess, trust me. And I was kind of like, well, this is kind of weird, right? Like anyone who puts up a website and has someone actually from afar that you never met read it. But a lot of my audience, there are a lot of engineers and IT guys, and you know they do a lot of research on their own. And I just figure to harness this workforce, I guess, and we all kind of work together to find deals. And you know, I kind of at the epicenter of that, I have the ability to kind of reach in my network and vet different operators and different deals. And, you know, I kind of just have an email list and I tell everybody what I'm investing in. And if people want to jump on board, they can jump on board too.
You sound like you're a very busy man. So you have the time and energy to keep all this going, Lane? How does it work?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually what I actually enjoy doing. I mean, talking with different people, talking with like-minded people, I think is the big thing. And people who are interested in spending the 2 hours after the day job to not watch TV and to, you know, read different financials or, you know, go and email different investors across the nation to try and leave that rat race behind. Because a lot of people I talk to, they don't quite enjoy the day job. It's not what they're very passionate about, and neither am I. I enjoy I'm more of an entrepreneur working for myself, and I enjoy kind of networking with other people that mindset.
When you find a new deal, do you have to wait till you've got a certain amount of money, or you see how much money people have put in, and then you go searching for the deal?
Well, it's kind of a leap of faith, right? So, you know, you go out, you look for a deal, and, you know, typically it's like $1 to $3 million is, you know, what you need to raise for the down payment and the rehab and some other miscellaneous costs. And, you know, I team up with other partners to help raise the funds, but it, you know, that's the entrepreneur part of it, right? And
yeah,
that's why I'm the entrepreneur, right? Because I can put out a party and nobody could come. It always seems to work out at the end.
These days, banks seem to be stepping away from a lot of the traditional lending, especially in that middle area of small apartment buildings. I found here in Australia that there are more private lenders stepping into that market.
Right. So currently in America, same thing is happening. You know, a lot of the single-family homes, they have government-subsidized loans. And then, you know, we as syndicators, as private equity groups, we pull our money together and we get loan sizes of over $1 million, and we're able to get very good financing, you know, 30-year, 10, 12-year notes at 5%, and with a non-recourse component too, which is pretty amazing. But if you're under $1 million and your property doesn't quite qualify, you know, there's lower occupancy, you're really in this no man's land of bad financing options. And it makes sense because a lot of mom-pa investors don't have the ability to work with other investors, you know, they're the ones buying these 2 to 50 unit apartment buildings. They can't get over that bigger number amount. And they're the biggest risks because they're just, quite frankly, not very good at what they do.
How do people become members of your club and invest in a project? Do they have to buy shares in your company? How does it work?
No, I mean, it's pretty much like I kind of tell people what I invest in. If you want to come in too, you know, do your own due diligence. I'm usually pretty transparent of, you know, what the due diligence that I've done and what I think of it. But it's mostly if you're an accredited investor by the, you know, by United States standards, you can invest at your own free will. But, you know, if you're more of a, you know, under $1 million net worth, I really need to get to know you. You know, I need to feel comfortable that your ability to invest, because a lot of these investments, well, nothing's a guarantee, right? I think it would be irresponsible of me to place someone in a project and have them put their last $50,000 or $25,000 to their name. That's just not the right way to do business.
I see that you also have a mentoring program. How long have you been doing that, and how do you help people?
Yeah, so the, you know, people go to simplepassivecashflow.com coaching. You know, some people are just, they just say, well, I just want you to teach me everything you know. I'm like, okay, you know, cool, we can do that. But, you know, for me, that's kind of trading time for money, right? And that's what everybody should be trying to get away from, trading time for money. But, you know, I do enjoy helping people one-on-one. I do like to see the growth in a lot of the students. And I mean, it's got to be a good fit. You know, it's got to be the right person, I feel like.
So what do you consider to be a good deal if you're looking at an investment property?
Yeah, so usually we underwrite deals to hit a certain percent return. And it ranges from 80 to 100% in 5 years or 17 to 20% IRs. But, you know, it's kind of, it goes through a lot of steps. It's a big spreadsheet to get to that number at the bottom of the spreadsheet. But for the most part, you know, the rents have to exceed the expenses. Income minus expenses has to be a very positive number for it to make sense to achieve those goals for the investors.
Mm. And I gather that when you look at a property, you also look at the potential of the property. So the properties that you look at, there's something more you could add value to, and that is that the trick of winning in the long run.
Right, right. I mean, one of my criteria is that we don't buy things that's less than 90% occupied. So a lot of these properties, they're very good properties. It's just the biggest thing is that there's some kind of management problem. For example, the, you know, they're renting the units for $600 when they could be really renting it for $750, which happens, and that's when we buy them. Or we could do about $3,000-$4,000 of improvements, you know, change out the countertops, put new flooring, repaint, and then bump those rents up another $50, $100. So that's the value add component that we're looking for. But as it is currently, as we buy it, it's cash flowing and it's a good asset. It's not a piece of junk. It's not something that's, you know, 20, 30% vacant. And it's a good property. And I think in this day and age, with it being a seller's market and where we are in the market cycle, you know, you have to be buying value add properties to last the down cycle.
What happened in the global financial crisis? I assume you owned property all through that.
So what happened there? I mean, a lot of people were, financing was kind of out of control. They were giving a lot of financing to people with no job, no income, no money. And that has been really gotten really tightened up these last 10 years. I mean, right now, I mean, there's families out there that are making a very good income. They have, you know, very good jobs, yet it's very hard for them to qualify for a loan. And that just, you know, it's slowly opening up, but it's nowhere near where it was before. So I think that's a good thing, though, right? Like, people who can't afford it shouldn't be getting loans.
No, that's wrong. And have you found there's been a change in the market over in the United States? I know back in the GFC, there were, or afterwards, the properties were pretty cheap. But I gather from talking to different guests that it's a different story now. The real estate market has become a lot more expensive.
Right, right. I mean, it goes, it's been going up 3 to 5% across the board all over the nation. You know, a lot of places. I started investing in Seattle back in 2012. You wouldn't be able to cash flow with a property out there. And, you know, I'm recently in Texas investing there, and a lot of properties now in Dallas aren't even making sense.
Mm.
But the key is there's always somebody out there that is either distressed seller or managing that property improperly. And those are the properties that you would like to buy.
Have you had any favor with any particular area? Do you concentrate on where good jobs are, or is it more about just the particular property and how it's managed?
Yeah, so first off, you know, just to get a definition out there, you know, we go after secondary markets. There's primary, secondary, and tertiary markets. Primary markets are like your Seattle's, your California's, your Hawaii's, your New York's, your Boston. The very high desirable places to live. In these areas, you have a lot of people with a lot of money, and they are going after, you know, property just to buy things. So they're pushing upward pressure on those prices. And also another thing, at the end of the day, the rent-to-value ratios just aren't making sense where you're going to cash flow. So we go after these secondary markets like a Birmingham, Atlanta, Indianapolis, Kansas City, Dallas, San Antonio. You know, these are kind of the second tier cities, good populations, and of course the job growth. So a lot of the job growth these days in America is in the South and the Southeast portions. So a lot of the migration for the blue collar jobs, which is what we're going for. You know, we don't go after the A class rentals. We go more after the B and C. Because in a correction, the A class is going to move to the B class is going to move to the C. And we want to be right there, ready to catch the majority of the population when they come down.
Right. And what about the downsizes? Have you had anything to do in that market at all? I believe that's a growing market over there as well.
Yeah. So, you know, I would say probably about 3-4 years ago, this big sentiment about the millennials, they're not buying houses anymore. Right, because, you know, they're kind of transient. They're the Uber generation that, you know, just rents. Plus, they don't got any money to buy a house. But, you know, as the baby boomers are starting to, you know, go into retirement, which I think we're kind of hitting that now, what a lot of baby boomers are doing is they're moving to the South to warmer climates. So they're moving a lot of their, you know, there's been a little bit of movement. So a lot of the millennials are kind of going into the older, taking the houses of the baby boomers. So that's kind of what's happening. But for the most part, a lot of the baby boomers, they're kind of downsizing homes to more of an apartment, more urban living. And it just makes more sense. They just don't need the space anymore. No. And a lot of people, they just don't have the money, right? So you've got to downsize your house. Yeah. Kind of a shame it's at the end of your life, but you know, not many people can manage their money, right? So that's the choices that they have to make.
Yeah. And is apartments and houses the only thing you invest in? Do you have any other real estate investments?
Yeah, so I've got an RV park down in Louisiana. You know, there's a lot of oil growth there, so a lot of workforce housing, but also looking to get a mobile home park and self-storage. So, you know, mobile home parks, a lot of people think that they are a little grungier than normal. I didn't grow up in an RV park or a mobile home park, but it's definitely a good investment because they're not making more of those. And then the downward pressure, you know, people are in need for housing these days, good ones. So that creates a very good demand for mobile homes. And then self-storage in America, they just keep all their junk. And especially, you know, you mentioned like the baby boomers retiring. Yeah, these big houses of all the, you know, junk from over the years. I mean, you've probably seen them in estate sales. So what will happen a lot of times that the demand for self-storage keeps going up and up and up.
I've seen those TV shows, yes.
Yeah.
And I've already been told by my children they don't want my stuff. So don't keep accumulating.
Yeah, and you know, it's a funny thing. I guess it's not that funny, but in the downward cycle, you know, the demand for that self-storage goes up because now people get foreclosed. They leave their house. A lot of times they don't know what to do with their junk. They think that they're going to rebound, so they stick it in the self-storage locker for $50 a month. So a lot of demand for that. So all kinds of, different investments that, you know, I kind of specialize in the more alternative investing, the more harder assets. But, you know, I think the key is to get closer to the operator. Get out of the crowdfunding investments and different stock market investments that have layers and layers of middlemen.
Mm. Well, that's very wise advice for someone that seems to be quite young. And I have to ask you, how long are you going to keep working in your full-time job? You seem as though you set yourself up pretty well already.
Yeah, I ask myself that every day. I think the only thing that keeps me there is the health insurance. But it allows me to, it's a steady paycheck coming in. It's not the hardest work there is. You know, it keeps me patient, right? Because now I'm not worried about putting food on the table. The day job does that. So if I don't want to do a deal that's not right, then I just don't do it. I think that's what a lot of entrepreneurs should do as opposed to just quitting cold turkey.
So you've got to set yourself up. But I assume you're doing all this because you want to be able to choose how you spend your day.
Right. I mean, it's the freedom. That's why you do it. I mean, part of me is I like to help people. I just see a lot of Americans or, you know, just the middle class in general. They just get screwed by the Wall Street mutual funds and all that kind of garbage. And, you know, I just feel like people should get involved more and take charge of the wheel, whether it be a limited partner or buying a single family home yourself. I mean, it's possible to just retire in 5 to 10 years as opposed to maybe hopefully you have enough in 40.
It's something that we all have to take into consideration because the government seem to be pulling away from funding retirement, and I certainly don't think that we'll have a very good life if that's all you've got to live on is the government pension.
Right. Yeah, we're not going to have Social Security by the time I'm around to see it.
Now, in Australia, they're means testing and income testing the pension, so we already, a lot of us don't qualify for it anyway.
Yeah. You know, I think I hear it all the time at work. I hear, you know, some of the retiring co-workers, they say, well, you know, hey, if you stay at your job for a few more years, you'll get this much more. But like in the back of my head, I'm thinking, well, yeah, of course they want you to do that because you're going to die. Like they know they can calculate the stuff out. They're probably going to die. And then they won't have to pay you any of that. I think it's just a little bit very sad that way people, they think about retirement and they kind of just hope and pray that they're going to have enough.
Do you have any business dealings with any overseas investors?
No, I mean, usually the way it works is, you know, you create a U.S. entity and you kind of just invest in that and just be a simple LLC. You know, most times, you know, America will have, tax treatments where, you know, you just pay tax once, whether here or there. But, you know, I think America has a very good rent-to-value ratio across the board. I don't think anywhere else where you can find a home for $100,000 where you can rent for $1,000 a month. Sometimes you can even get it for $1,500 a month. You know, I haven't seen it in Asia. I haven't seen it in Europe. I don't know how Australia is, but...
I don't think you'll find it in too many places in Australia. Maybe Australia certainly is one of the most expensive places.
Right. I mean, that'd be the first thing. You know, if you're kind of interested in this space, you know, take a look at, go on. I don't know what you guys have there. We have Zillow, you know, something to check out the prices of a home and then go look. You know, like you were going to rent that property, how much you had rented for, and then take the monthly rent divided by the purchase price, and that's your rent-to-value ratio. A lot of the homes that we buy here in America are over 1%, so that's how you get the $1,000 rent per $100,000 home.
So how do people, they want to follow you or get to know more about you, where would they go?
Yeah, come to simplepassivecashflow.com. Check out my podcast, Simple Passive Cashflow. Just got on Spotify recently, too. You guys listen to that. But, I got a YouTube channel. And, you know, just check out the podcast. And, you know, if you got any questions, shoot me an email, lane@simplepassivecashflow.com.
All right. So just in summary, would you like to say where you think the best way to go with real estate investing is, what you found?
Yeah, I think the best way is, you know, if you've got the bandwidth, you got the time to do it, and you've got, you know, $20,000-$25,000 saved, I would say go out and buy a first single family home with a, you know, simple loan, and, you know, go on and get a property manager to manage it for you, and then just kind of watch it and manage it and try your best, and you're going to be learning and stumbling along the way. But then I think you'll soon find that, you know, you get 10 of those, you know, you probably could retire on that, and that'll be all she wrote. And it'll kind of grow and outpace inflation.
Yeah, so that's the main thing, is to have passive income, and that's what it's all about. So give up, right, to be able to give up that day job.
Exactly. Different countries, same idea, same rat race.
That's right. Okay, well, it's been great chatting with you and hearing a bit about your story and your enthusiasm, and it's a credit to you that you saw the light at such a young age.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Anne.
You're welcome. It's Anne Nelson, and we've been listening to Lane from simplepassivecashflow.com.
You have been listening to the podcast show of Retire Well, Retire Happy with your host, Annie Nelson. For more information on the show's guests and being retirement ready, pop on over to my website, www.annnelson.com.au, on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Until next time, be happy, stay healthy, and help somebody.